Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Open your hearts and loosen your butts. It's time for Couples Therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's Couples Therapy.
Welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Andy.
And I am Naomi.
We are a real life couple.
A real life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy,
in quarantine, we answer a couple of questions from a couple of different listeners.
Hell yes.
I was honestly going to say, I'm like, we do whatever the fuck we want. But I just thought, you know what? Just stick to it. Just stick to it. Andy, how you doing today?
Oh, drained.
Okay, well then I'm going to pivot. Aren't you so excited about today's guest?
Oh, 100%. This was, you were on his podcast a while ago, correct?
Yes, and it was like the entree. Well, it was just so good because I've been a fan of him for so many years. So it was so nice when he reached out. And then, of course, I was like, will you do my podcast? You guys have already heard his dulcet tones. Today, we are talking to Alec Mappa.
Hell yes.
Ooh, Alec is an actor and comedian who's done it all, honey. TV, movies, Broadway. He's won a GLAAD award. He co-hosts the podcast Alec Mappa Hot Mess with psychotherapist Matthew Dempsey, which is very, very good. They get into some real stuff, but it's also funny, and it's just like, highly recommend. And he is going to be in a new show with Alec Baldwin and Kelsey Grammer.
Frasier himself?
Honey, I'm watching for Alec. Okay? I said, I ain't watching them two old white dudes. I'm done with them. Give me Alec Mappa.
Alec Mappa, not Baldwin.
Exactly. Mappa, not Baldwin.
Ooh, make t-shirts.
I am Mappa, not Baldwin. Those are going to be real hot merch.
I think that it should be legally okay to call Kelsey Grammer Frasier. I think that you should be, if you serve him at a restaurant,
yep.
If you just see him in real life and be like, what up, Frasier?
Yep.
I think you should be protected. He can't sue you.
Well, he shouldn't sue someone for calling him Frasier in the first place.
Yeah, but isn't he like a right-wing dude? He's probably pretty litigious.
That's so funny. Oh, my God.
Naomi, no, I got to tell you, a lot of my friends have been sued by Kelsey Grammer for calling him Frasier.
I need to know how he became the executive producer of Girlfriends. Like, who? Because you know he never saw the show. Like, somebody just told him, hey, I got this show. You want to put your name on it? And, like, because, like, Kelsey Grammer and Girlfriends is like something I want to do a deep dive. I need BuzzFeed to get into it.
No, let's try to do this. Let's, you know, we haven't ever really tried to do a special episode. Let's do a special episode about Girlfriends. We'll Maybe. Get the Girlfriends and Kelsey Grammer. We'll see if we can get them all in one episode to talk about the show.
Sure, Andy. Oh my God. You guys, before we get to Alec, just a little bit of housekeeping. As always, you can come visit us on Twitch at twitch.tv/couplestherapypod every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Couples Therapy Quarantine Crew. Honestly, I hope we're only doing this show for a couple more months. I would like to no longer be in a quarantine. However, we do have a good time. It's free, it's an hour, and it's magical.
Yeah. It's got us through the pandemic. I think it's got the Couples Therapy Quarantine Crew through the pandemic.
It has. And it's also helped me realize that maybe being a cult leader is in my future. I don't know.
No.
Also, no, we, no, do, no. We do have, I'm not going to be a cult leader. I don't like being responsible for other people. Yeah. So it's like, anyway, also we have Jubu t-shirts, two different styles, gorgeous. You can.
And Couples Therapy Quarantine Crew t-shirts.
Right. All at the Linktree on the Couples Therapy Instagram page. So check that out.
Or Twitter.
Thank you.
And which then, is at Naomi and Andy.
And then also, I have a new podcast that is out that I co-host with comedian Megan Gailey called I Love a Lifetime Movie. And it is a Lifetime Movie podcast. I mean, it's there in the title. But we watch a movie. We talk about it. We interview either people from the movie or we bring in fellow Lifetime fans to help us break it down. And so far, it has been well received. And I hope you will continue to receive it.
Now, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salad and scrambled eggs.
Mercy. Mercy.
Mercy.
I would like to go to Alec Mappa because he is the best.
Roll it. Alec, can I say I am charmed by your energy?
Oh, really? Yeah, people have said that. I'm on my second glass of Freixenet, so I get even more charming as the time goes by.
Wait, have they said specifically charmed by your energy? Because that feels like something idiosyncratic, idiosyncratic compliment that I would give someone.
Okay. All right. I'll take it. I'll accept it. You know what? I'm Asian, so I'm not very good at accepting compliments because it's boastful in my culture to like accept a compliment. So I'm supposed to bat it away like a hive of bees, but I will accept your compliment that you're charmed by my energy, or if that's what it was.
It was exactly that feeling. Well, okay. I will say, though, you do have just a lot of energy for life. You do to me. Because it's like, on one hand, I feel like you are a no bullshit person. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're like, let's get into it.
You know, well, you know what? I have no secrets. And I talk, I have a, you were on my podcast.
Yes, Hot Mess Podcast.
I have a Hot Mess. It's called the Hot Mess Podcast, and it's about mental health. And I want to take the stigma out of talking about, we're only as dirty as our secrets. Mm-hmm. And I want to take the stigma out of talking about mental health because I suffered needlessly for years because I was embarrassed. Mm-hmm. I was ashamed in my culture as an Asian person. It was shameful for me to, only crazy people went to a psychiatrist. Only people who were weak needed medicine. Only people who were indiscreet talked about their personal problems with a stranger outside of the family. So I talk about things out open to prove that I'm living proof that you can't die from embarrassment.
I love that. That's real good.
Yeah, although I'll tell you from the inside of my head, it feels like you can. Every time some little, even nothing that should be shameful to a normal human, but it's definitely, but my brain is just like, that's shameful. Pops in my head. I started a shame file. I started a thing.
You did? You're keeping tabs?
Yeah. Every time one of those things pops into my head, I'm like, I'm going to write this down and maybe that will steal some of its power. Mm. Maybe like a Frodo throwing the ring into
the fire.
Into Mount Doom. Into the fire.
Yeah, I'm Catholic. I don't need the extra filing. It's my whole life. I mean, Naomi, you're a comedian. You get up in front of people.
Right.
It's kind of like, I think that being a comic, being a funny person teaches you shame resilience.
Yes. Yes. Because
even if you have a great set where you killed, don't you ever walk off stage saying, I told too much. they know too much about me. They know how fucked up I am. I mean, that was really funny, but now they think I'm an asshole. You know, is that kind? Don't you ever feel that way?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah. Or I don't know, the moment when you start to experience something that is terrible, and you're like, I gotta remember this for the stage. You know,
you mean in real life?
Yes, like how you can live something terrible, but then realize you can like utilize it, but then. It's like, it still was an embarrassing thing, right? Like, you don't tell the story of the perfect day. You tell the story of when the shit went sideways.
Yeah. And the terrible feeling you can relive. You can feel it in your face and in the back of your head. Like, you know, like a terrible, terrible feeling is like being caught in a lie.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, which is why I don't lie.
Didn't you just say that you were here yesterday? So how could you have not been in town at all. Like that stuff where you're just kind of like, oh, you got me. That where your face gets hot and it's just like, or you say something about, okay, so back in the olden days, television, how it used to work is before the advent of the internet, we're saying the 90s, at Warner Brothers, they had Seinfeld and Friends and ER, and all of that was filmed at Warner Brothers. And if you were up for a show, I'm Mad About You, if you were up for any of those shows, you had to go to Warner Brothers, get out of your car, go to the place where they had all the sides, pick up the sides, and there was and it looked like a dentist office. And you would sit there at the dentist office, and then the casting director would come back and walk you back to the rooms. So, but you had to pick up the sides, and there was a dreadful, dreadful woman who worked there.
Oh no.
You know, 90s fried hair and just kind of like, I just need the sides for Matt. They're over there. Like snappish.
Yeah. They're over there.
They're over there.
That's in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She in becomes Selma Diamond in your imagination. They're over there. What are you, blind? Get him yourself. What am I, your slave? So I was at a party and somebody was talking about Warner Brothers and oh, that awful woman. And I said, oh yeah, she's a total bitch. And this girl said, does she have like really crunchy blonde hair? And I said, yeah. She goes, she's my sister. Wow. And I went, oh my God, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And she said, don't be sorry. She's a total bitch.
Thank God.
Just nasty to everybody, you know, yeah. And in those yeah. situations where you're so vulnerable and you're just like, I'm auditioning for a television show. You
know? Oh God, the most vulnerable.
Right. Oh my gosh.
But wait, but talking about this stuff has robbed it of its power for you? Talking about it in public or talking about it on your podcast?
Always. Yeah. I mean, you know, my whole shtick is me with egg on my face, you know. you know, our family is the gay and lesbian vacation group that meets every year and they go on cruises. It's all the gays and lesbians and the children that they purchase in Beijing. And so We've traveled all over the world together. And one year we were at a campground and all the parents drink because we're queer. So I drank too much at this party. My husband and I were crossing the campground and all of a sudden I had to take a shit so bad. It was like, and I couldn't hold it in. I started taking a crap in the bushes and my husband was like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And he goes, stop, stop. And I was like, I can't. I took a dump in the bushes. And so of course, at the end of the week, I had to talk about it on stage.
Right. Of course. Right.
Sure.
Yeah. So you might want to watch your step near the welcome hut is what I'm saying.
It's like, okay, the thing, you know, I would love to know more about, which I found so not fascinating, but exciting, which is, it's my personal issue. Mm-hmm. You have a black teenage son.
I do. He's 16.
He's grown. Okay. Mm-hmm. He is mm-hmm. so grown.
He thinks he's grown.
Well, how, like,
he can have his own TikTok account. That's grown.
Yeah, he has a TikTok account. It's true.
That's maturity in our society.
Mm-hmm. Did you like always know you wanted to be a parent? Because I ask this because I'm someone who very much struggles with our creative lifestyle,
right?
And the idea of parenthood.
And that's like, a real area of concern. That is a real area of concern. I think that after my husband and I were married and we bought a house, it seemed more and more like we were looking at each other going, is this it? And then the more we talked, the more, is it just us? I mean, seriously, is it just going to be us? I mean, let's have that discussion. And we were the people who, you know, we were the couple who, our married friends who had kids said, will you please watch our kid for the night? We have to have a night out or we're going to kill the kid. Or I have a big audition. I have a pilot audition today and I just need to throw my baby through your window. Here's the formula. So we always were looking after, because that's who we are. Mm-hmm. And then it became more and more like, the more we talked about it, the more it seemed like we were missing somebody. Mm-hmm. I can't explain it any other way. We're missing somebody we hadn't met. So we went on our family cruise and then we met other parents, queer parents and people who had adopted through the foster adopt system. Mm-hmm. And then we heard that nobody wants them over the age of 3.
Yeah.
Nobody wants a boy. And if they're children of color,
mm-hmm.
The most the most common placement is a Caucasian baby girl.
Yeah.
Now I said I've got nothing against little white girls. I've been one my entire life. So nobody wants them over the age of three, and nobody wants. They said that a child of color over the age of three, a Caucasian baby girl is seven times more likely to be placed than a child of color over the age of three, boy or girl. So that kind of like guided our decision. And then when we met our kid, who was our foster kid, who was a five-year-old black boy, we were like, I always say, I'm Asian. My husband is white. Our son is black. We look like the last 2 minutes from It's a Small World. when we met him and he clung to me like I was an oxygen tank and he was underwater. And I was like, if I have to give this kid back, I'm going to jail. He was our kid from the beginning. So it kind of like the circumstances kind of like triangulated. And then we ended up with the kid that we had. And when we felt that he was our kid, he was our kid.
Right. Right. Yeah. Once you, when you do, just out of curiosity, once you know you're ready to do the adoption, does the foster system give you a hard time? Do you have to like go through the process?
They
again,
want you to take this. They want you to take this. That's a great question, by the way. They want you to take this question, the offer very seriously. And they want you to be as critical in your thinking as possible. And they want you to say, if this isn't right for you, say this isn't right for me. Because their interest, the social worker's interest, the agency's interest is getting that kid into a placement that they're not going to lose.
Right, right. Forever home. Not like, you know,
forever home. And by the, you know, our kid was what was listed as a difficult case because he was five.
Well, he was a five-year-old boy.
Which
is that what was difficult? Like just being energetic and
do you mean difficult? Like
he because was, like, everybody precocious? Wants a baby. Everybody wants a baby. And so, but when my husband and I met him, it occurred to me, this isn't a 5 year old, this is a baby. Because when you're five, you still need your mommy and daddy or two gay guys with a really cute house. So
that's what I need.
You know what I mean? And then we also heard about other kids in the system. You know, there was an 18-year-old black girl who was going to college, straight A's. And she was like, I still want to be adopted. And we were like, what? And I was like, and people were asking the question, why do you still want to be adopted? She goes, I'm going away to college. Don't you think I'd want someplace to belong, come home to at Christmas and Thanksgiving? It's like my need to have a family to call my own has not gone away.
Right.
We're all projectile crying. So that's what made us explore the option of having an older kid. And, you know, there was stuff that was that we have to deal with and you have to continue to deal with dealing with somebody who was parented 5 years before we showed up. But our kid is like, he is the opposite of me. He's like deadpan. He is. His delivery is so. You know when somebody just fucking nails it and they don't do anything?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. They don't sell it. They just say it. That's my kid.
He's well, you so guys, fresh. I was watching some video that I adored of you guys playing poker, maybe, like the family cards.
Yeah, Friday night is poker night. We play poker every
And I just like, and I just like love that. And he was just so funny. But what I found so interesting was I remember he cussed, you know, in something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, to his parents? Because I didn't grow up being allowed to like really be myself. Like I wasn't allowed to have my personality around my family.
I still tense up if I accidentally swear around them.
I know, right?
Like, I didn't cuss in front of my parents.
Right. And I mean, right, the way you said you grew up too, right? Like keep it in and like keep it together.
Right.
So it's like, you know, it's like cool to just like watch you like to watch. I don't know. I'm like, I wish when I was 16,
you
I could have hung out.
Parents.
Yeah, I wish I had a cool parent.
So what
I
we said to him when he, because he started cussing pretty early, because he lives with two gay guys. All right. So I said, all right, listen, I'm, you know, there are other things that are more important to us as your parents, that you're a good person, that you're not a bully, that you like look out for people and you're a good person. So I said, if you're going to cuss, know your audience. Know your audience, because if you do that in front of people you're not supposed to do that in front of, you're busted, and I can't do anything to bail you out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
That's the talk my parents gave me about swear words.
So I said, know your audience.
It was like, don't do it around us, I think. But it was also like, there's a difference between swear words and hurtful words. You can use swear words. You can't use hurtful words.
Interesting.
Right, right. Interesting. And my husband's parents are very religious. And his sister is, they're kind of on the religious side. They're a little more conservative. So I said, you know, every time at Thanksgiving when we pull up, I'm like, remember. Easy. He's like, I know.
Remember, don't call Jesus the C word.
Yeah. But I mean, other things have become important to me. I mean, especially this year. I mean, as always, I mean, his black identity is super important. That's humbling because I can give him everything except the experience of what it's like to be raised by black people.
Did you know, though, going in, is that's what I always wonder. It's like, does somebody give you as a non-black parent? Like, for instance, there's a woman in Brooklyn, a black woman who, like, teaches white women how to do their black baby's hair. You know, like, yes. For girls. Yes. Is there any sort of...
Did someone hand you, like, a James Baldwin novel?
Thank you. Someone was like, how to help you.
No, but they should.
I know.
They should. If there's I remember one time, my husband and I, we were on the LA subway, you know, the closest thing we have to subway.
Brave, yes.
In Los Angeles. And we were in a rush to get downtown to something, some science museum thing we were taking him to. And we had him with us. He was five. He was tiny. He was holding our hand. And we had left the house and he had ashy legs and a busted fro. And all the black people looked at us like,
like, what you doing to that boy?
like we had just abused him in front of everybody. Right. And I was literally like, with my husband, do you have any lotion? Do you have any lotion? And when he said no, I turned to the black woman next to me. I was like, do you have any lotion? Do you have any lotion? And I realized that is super important. It's kind of like that. Detail of the care for black skin, the care for black hair. And, you know, the initial reaction to a lot of people in foster care is it's just hair. It's just skin. No, it's culture. And it's important. The hair is about time spent with somebody. The hair is about passing on your knowledge of hair onto somebody else. So we didn't know anything about black hair, but we had the good sense to have black friends come over and show us how to wrap the hair, how to condition it, how to do twists, et cetera, and so forth. I mean, now he keeps it short, so it's shaved off. But it's like, and also, my black friends, we have this thing called, well, pre-COVID, it was called Blacktivities. Where it's like, okay, you're going to be with Auntie Naomi today for the whole day.
Oh my God, I wish.
You're going to do black stuff. All day. You're gonna go to Inglewood, you're gonna hang out, and we have nothing to do with it.
Right.
Because it's the thing of like, well, you know this, like when you're a person of color, when you're a minority and you're in an exclusively white space for a protracted period of time, that's stressful.
Yes. Yes.
You're just kind of like, and then when another black person enters the room, you're like, you know, I can speak to that as a queer person. You know, it's like, I'm on an Adam Sandler set and nobody speaks my language. And then I go into the makeup and hair trailer and I'm like, girl! Do you know what I mean? It's like, and so we have to give.
Like you're in space. You're in space gasping and you finally get into the
oxygen.
But there were generations, the previous generation of interracial adoptions all said, we don't see color.
Right.
So they had kids of color growing up going, I don't know who I am. I don't know where I belong. I don't know. So last year, pre-COVID, we were supposed to go on an HBCU tour.
Oh, uh-huh.
Because I think it would be great, and it ultimately it's up to him, but I think it would be great for him to have an exclusively black experience.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, so he can like live, breathe, you know, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Well, that's the generation that I grew up in, where it's like you are very opening and welcome in that, but you don't see any difference. You, everyone is the same, which is good in the sense that you're not treating anyone badly for whatever.
Well, where'd you grow up?
In Pennsylvania in the 80s and the 90s, right? But at the same time, like you also don't learn to appreciate the differences in people because you're trying so hard to be like, no, every human is the exact same. And I can treat every single person the exact same way. And so I can't.
Were you raised as a religious Jew, conservative Jew?
Reform. Not, I mean, you know, Jewish enough. Not Jewish enough for Orthodox, but Jewish enough for every other Christian that was around me.
And so that culture is a part of who you are, and you wouldn't want anybody to see, well, I see all religions, so it really doesn't. No, that being Jewish is an important part of how you were raised and your culture and where you come from.
Right, but also like the part that would like reinforce that is that I was seen other. Because I was like one of the very few Jews. So it didn't feel good when everyone was like,
othering me. Oh, to be othered in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Right. And so between my parents being like, all people are the same. You can't, if there's even a good stereotype, don't pay attention to that. Right. And there's no other, it's tough to explain, but like, it's not that they were like,
what would qualify as a good Jewish stereotype?
Or not Jewish, but just like the exact same, like there's black culture, right? We can all agree that there is black culture. And my parents would very, in an attempt to try to say that, like, we're all the same. You shouldn't think that other people are below you or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It would be to kind of just like, pass over black culture.
Okay, so you're talking about status in the way you conceive of other people. Your status as an individual isn't higher or less than anybody else's.
Right.
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 But in doing that, you kind of like ignore the like important differences.
Well, or not even important, but like I remember, for instance, when we first, I forgot, it was something where I was like, you don't ask me questions about like my upbringing or like, you know, wanting to know stuff. And Andy, and you said, you were like, I don't want to say the wrong thing.
No, that's separate. That's totally separate. That is my parents. that comes from like one time, like in Temple, I said something. I was like 6 or 7 or 8, somewhere around there. And I said something to someone. I'm like, it was the Oneg Shabbat. So after services on Friday nights, there's like a little snack hour with punch and cake and fruit and stuff. And I said to someone, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. It's just read it. It's some Shakespeare thing I just read. And afterwards, my mom not scolded me, but she's like, that woman, she's like, she has cancer. You can't say stuff like that.
And how was I supposed to know that?
Well,
mom?
Exactly. Mom? Exactly.
But am I the leukemia whisperer? How on earth?
Right, I'm not walking around with like a cancer detector. With like
eat,
a little...
drink, and be merry. I mean, like, let's not act like somebody has cancer.
Right. So my parents' thing was like, don't ask questions because you don't want to like accidentally. It was,
you don't
want to
step in it. You don't want to step
no,
in
but it comes
it.
From a good place. You don't want to like bring up something that someone might make someone feel bad. Again, well,
about reading the room. That's about, I'm interested in you two. What's the intersectionality between you two? Where do your cultures or your personalities intersect that make you work as a couple?
I think it is interesting because, and I've said this a lot on the pod and people know, you know, I grew up in Harlem. I went to private school on the Upper East Side. Mm-hmm. All I knew were Jews. So when Andy talked about his experience being one of the only Jews and being an other, because as far as I knew, I was like, Jews are white. They're thriving.
Right, right.
I didn't know, like, I didn't know the different, I didn't know the different brands of white. You know what I mean? Right. Like when I look at somebody, I'm like, you're white. You're white. But I think that what we do have is both having that experience of being on the outside.
Okay.
And trying to basically use our personalities to get people to ignore our weirdness, difference.
Or what our perceived otherness. Because it's like, as a queer person, the code switch is based on who's cool.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like reading the room, because I was raised by a rageaholic, so I know how to read a room. My father was a war survivor with PTSD, so it was all about like, hey, everything's great. So as a queer person, as a person of color, I walk into a room like, okay, who's cool? Mm-hmm. So it's, and my black friends are all about like, I know who's cool with black people right away.
Yes.
I can walk into a white space and know who's cool, and I could see who's trying too hard, and I could see who's scared of having the uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah.
Because the conversation about race isn't designed to make white people comfortable. You have to like wade through a certain amount of accountability and history and ownership. You know, it's see, the thing is, Naomi, I'm race-splaining to you right now what it is to be a black woman in America. No, but it's that thing of that subjective feeling of like, who's cool? And same with, I mean, to a certain extent, Jewish people. It's kind of like, you know, it's like you can walk into a room and know, okay, who's the Jew hater here? Oh, Mel Gibson, fuck off. You know, it's just like...
right.
We have some good visual, you know, usually if someone has a swastika on them.
That's people in detective novels would call a clue. Yeah. But
sorry, you go.
No, I was going to ask about your white husband because, you know, I think depending on how we feel about ourselves as POC, the white lover can be helpful or a white lover can be dangerous.
White.
You know what I mean, though?
Yes, yes. They can be. I've been in previous situations. Okay. I was at the Ralph Lauren mansion on the Upper East Side in New York City.
Live.
And I was there with my my white ex, who was wonderful, who was a designer with Ralph Lauren. He did illustrations for the company and everything. Tall, good-looking white guy. He walks in, and everybody from behind the counter said, hello, hi, welcome. I walk in. Crickets. I mean, you could hear actual crickets. I was like, are there crickets in the Ralph Lauren mansion? And then I said, did you see that? They completely ignored me. And he would be, I don't think this was his intention, but he would try to explain it away. Uh-huh. So going, uh-huh. Oh, maybe they're busy or they were looking the other way. But oh, that always made me feel invalidated.
Right. Right.
Like, yeah. Oh, so don't gaslight me and say I didn't see what I just fucking saw.
Right. Exactly.
You know? And I think that if you date a white person like that,
yeah,
that's trouble. Yeah. My husband is from Louisiana. His parents actually moved from Louisiana to the Central Valley of California because they said, this Louisiana is great. It's our home, but everybody's so racist here, and I don't want my kids growing up hearing that. So they moved to the Central Valley, which is primarily Latino.
Okay.
Primarily Latino, Portuguese, and Black.
Okay.
And they were not in an affluent part of the Central Valley, the San Joaquin Valley. So it's kind of like it's brown town. It's and right. So and my in-laws are the people who adopt people. You know, we're having, like, you guys are over for a dinner party and they're like, oh, give us your number. If you're ever in the San Joaquin Valley and you're driving all the way up to San Francisco, please stop by. And they mean it.
Yeah.
You know? So my husband's house was the house where all the neighborhood kids played. My husband's house was where all the kids hung out from in high school. And all the kids were primarily brown. Mm-hmm. And so I think the thing is, like, I grew up in San Francisco. I was bused. I was around black majority of black and Latino people. Mm-hmm. I lived in a white neighborhood, but I was bused to a lower income neighborhood where everybody was brown. And also San Francisco is 7 miles by 7 miles. It's hard to have an exclusive neighborhood anywhere. You know,
they try to. They're really working on it.
They really tried to, but it's in the 70s. San Francisco in the 70s, not now. Yeah. So I think that I grew up kind of like just seeing all different kinds of people. So it wasn't shocking to me. I think that if you grow up in a homogenous environment and you don't see anybody other than you, then those conversations are uncomfortable.
Right.
Then those conversations are like, I don't know if I'm saying the wrong thing, you know, because I grew up with people going, shut the fuck up. Just ask me a question.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That's the hemming and hawing. It's like, what?
Yeah.
What do you want to know?
No, it's not okay to touch my hair. No, it's not. You know, it's just people telling me, you know, how it was. My best friends, you know, I was bullied so much all throughout elementary school. All my best friends were the black girls. And they liked me because I knew how to play Chinese jump rope. Did you ever do that?
No, I never played Chinese jump rope.
Chinese jump rope is you take rubber bands. And you turn them into this thing. And it's like a Chinese jump. It's... You didn't do that in New York City?
No,
did you do
no.
double dutch?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah. Oh, yeah. Did... double dutch. It took me a very long time to learn.
Yeah, Chinese jump rope is like it's like rubber bands and it's elastic and you take like 1,000 rubber bands and you link them all together and you roll them up to the ball and then you stretch them out into a line and you do all of these kind of Chinese jump rope type things.
Okay.
But but what bonded me to those girls in elementary school? How they were my I hid behind them because their brothers were nicer to me because I was their friend, or somebody would be less inclined to bully me because I was with a girl. Basically, I was like in prison and I made friends with the biggest baddest bitches. I did everything but shiv somebody on my first day. So they were my saviors. They were my protectors. And so I always viewed like black women and black people as gravitate towards that. And you're going to be okay.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Uh-huh.
That was my safety plan as a kid who was bused into that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. it wasn't viewed as a negative. It was like, okay, just fit in with that and you're going to be all right.
And then did you go right from San Francisco to LA or did you live in
New York? I went to San Francisco to New York City.
Okay, you were in New York for a while.
Yeah, I went to San Francisco to New York City. And that was the very first time that it was ever pointed out to me that I was othered. Because, like, everybody in San Francisco is Asian. Nobody gives a shit. Everybody looks like me. And everybody's like...
Right.
What? Somebody asked, what do you have for breakfast?
Like,
yeah, like, what do Filipino people have for breakfast? And I was like, cereal? I don't know, whatever's on the Denny's menu. What can I bring you? Moons over my hammy. Yeah.
That's so...
What strange... By the way, when I said, like... earlier, like things about like people's culture that mm-hmm. you don't, it's not stupid shit like that. So we're clear. My parents, like, it wasn't like don't ask what people have for breakfast. Also, don't ask that question because it's a dumb question.
Oh, I love it.
So I just want that out there that my parents are. Are like,
well, what is it about you that makes you kind of like? What was it about him that made you feel like, oh, he's cool?
I know. So we met at UCB, you know, in New York.
Right.
And initially I was like, what? And he's so freaking young looking. So imagine 12 years ago.
Yeah, I want to make you a mug of Ovaltine.
Then I was like, he's a child.
Yeah.
And when we met, he was like, I was a philosophy professor. I just left grad school. I got my master's. I decided not to do the PhD. So initially I was like, okay. You've like lived
philosophy.
Yeah.
Right. I just thought to myself, I was like, okay, because I'm in this comedy world where everybody is 25, their parents pay their bills, and like New York is, you know, there's like one bag and a dream. You know,
I
was like really into somebody where like, oh, you've had a job. You've been out in these streets. Like you have something that's not like comedy and theater.
Did not pay my bills.
To touch on, I felt like that was few and far between. And that was like kind of what made me feel like, okay, like you cool. We could hang out. It wasn't romantic off the top, but I was like, okay, we could hang out. And then it kind of was like, we were like friends and then we would G-chat all day.
No, but I'm saying, is there something that he said or a look that he gave you or?
I mean, not
I'm talking about you like you're not here.
I know. I'm trying to think, like you mean romantically or you just mean like that I knew he was a white dude who was in fuckery?
Just kind of subjectively, just kind of like, you know how people do.
I know. No, that's the thing. It's like, it wasn't because he was very like, he was not, what's the word?
I was real emotionally closed off.
Right. It's not like I knew he was interested.
For a while.
It wasn't that. It was more like.
Up until therapy.
Up
until therapy cracked me open. Or again, it was more just fear of being vulnerable. Fear of like having that vulnerability. I mean, this goes back to kind of like what we started at. Like anytime that there was any kind of vulnerability, it was embarrassing. It was shameful.
Newsflash, nobody likes being vulnerable. Nobody. It's like, there's nobody out there going, I want to be unsure. I want to be in a space where I don't know what to expect or I won't know what people think of me.
Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't even want to take any risks. I was very risk averse.
Okay.
And,
all right.
And then I don't.
So you gravitated towards UCB, which is all improv and risk and yes and.
Right. And I fucking hated it until I was good at it.
It's so true. He was also, and he's a very even keel person, even kind of now. Like, he's anxious, but like, it doesn't manifest itself outwardly. And I know as someone who is, I'm feeling it all and it's right at the surface and it's out of 10.
Yes, yes.
I was very attracted to a personality that could accept that, but not be like rocked by it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That was huge.
Like my husband doesn't take me personally. No, I mean, that's really what makes us work is he doesn't take me personally. I can be like certifiably criminally insane. And he'll just go.
How long have you been together?
Whenever you're through, let's have a drink. We've been together 19 years.
19 years. 19 that's so years. Many years.
And here's the thing. Marriage is an experiment in terror. It's like, because it's really about like, I'm going to see you at your absolute worst. Mm-hmm. And what am I going to forgive? You know, it's like, I'm going to see your deepest, darkest, unhealed hurt places. And I'm going to see your deepest, darkest, unhurt places. And what am I going to do? Am I going to point and laugh? Or am I going to go, listen, that's your old stuff. Here's a story about me, and I don't come off too well in it. Around the time of election, I was drinking quite a bit because I was very tense. You know, you know, the past administration, a roller coaster is supposed to last 2 minutes, 3 minutes tops. We've been on one for 4 years.
Right.
So I tied one on with a friend here at the house, and I drank a little too much tequila. My husband went to sleep, and I was left. You know that point where you should have stopped drinking about 2 hours ago? I went on for another four. So my husband woke up to me on the couch going, "Where are you? I'm out here all by myself. Where are you?" And he had to walk me back to the bed. And I was saying things like, "Nobody loves me. Nobody cares about me." Now that is like my most, that's the broken place.
Yeah.
Deep down inside that it took that much tequila to, you know, to bring to the surface.
Yeah.
But he was just like, "Shut the fuck up. Let's just say this." You know, it's like, and I'm not saying that's what marriage is all the time, but you have to kind of be that vulnerable in front of another person. Mm-hmm. And when your darkest places are exposed and the other person goes, "That's it?" And you're like, "Yeah." And they, okay, let's move on. Let's move on from here. And I think also the challenge with marriages too is like, we're not the same person we were 19 years ago.
Right.
Yeah. We're not the same people we were 7 years ago. We were not the same person. And, you know, you add a kid on top of that. And then it's just like, what makes us work is that he's stupid funny. Like stupid wrong funny. Like the record scratching wrong funny. And he's my best friend, and I'm attracted to him. So you have to be attracted to them, and because it's like, well, you're not gonna fuck all the time. So if I'm not fucking him, then he's my best friend.
Right.
And if I don't like him, well, then we still can have sex. That's my philosophy. Anyway, I'm really lucky. I know that that's a rare occurrence. It's a rare occurrence to meet somebody who's going to grow with you and change.
Yes.
Yeah. Someone. It's so funny. I was just thinking about the someone who can excavate your broken place.
Mm-hmm.
Like look around and be like, "Yeah, this is okay. I can live in this."
I mean, you guys, 10 years, right? You've been together for 10 years. I mean, and you weren't the same people you were.
No.
10, 12 years ago.
Exactly.
No, we're better.
I just flash forwarded in my head. I saw a screenplay based on you two that takes place in the 30s. You're a Bolsheviks. You're both Bolsheviks and you needed a meeting. You're an intellectual from the Harlem Renaissance. He's a Bolshevik from the Lower East Side. It's a Romeo and Juliet kind of situation.
Oh, I love that.
Go with that. That's the premise. That's the launch. Go. It's yours.
Okay, now that we have a project, I think it's a perfect time to take a little break. So we're going to come back with Alec and answer your relationship questions.
Awesome.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, y'all. Wanted to pop in real quick and let you know that if you like what you hear and you want to support the show, there are a couple different ways.
Most of our support comes from our wonderful Patreon community. For $5 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes of just us, mostly spilling the tea, and occasionally searching for crazy bread in Los Angeles, plus lots of other bonus content. We love our page pals, and we couldn't do this without you. And if you want to join, go to patreon.com/couplestherapypod.
We also have merch, which includes Gotta Miss a Bitch and Jubu t-shirts, yeah, which you can find in the link tree in our Twitter or Insta bios.
And for absolutely $0, you can rate and review the show on Apple.
5 stars, please. It'll only take 10 seconds, and it helps us tremendously. Okay, that's it. We love you deeply. Now back to the show. And we're back, honey. We got Alec Mappa ready to handle your scandal.
And okay? We're also looking for financing for
our motion
film.
Picture, for our 19th, our period piece, our Romeo and Juliet period piece.
We get questions from Gmail, Instagram, Twitter, voicemail. This one comes to us from Instagram by Anonymous.
I love an Anonymous.
Okay, by QAnon.
by QAnonymous. Where do you get adrenochrome? No. So, my boyfriend and I have been together 2.5 years and are in our mid-20s.
All right.
For context, we don't live together. I moved out and he lives with his dad. Mm. My boyfriend got his wisdom teeth out on a Thursday, and I didn't see him until Sunday.
Okay.
I was checking in on him and he kept telling me he was doing fine and in no pain. However, he was seriously upset that I did not make time to go see him, but I couldn't help that I had commitments before the surgery was scheduled. Then I said I was busy. I couldn't find the time. Well, that did not go over well. Ooh. Now I feel like a terrible person, and I'm sure he views me differently now. Oh. Going back, I wish I could have done it differently. I just thought it's only wisdom teeth, not a broken bone. I told him I promise it won't happen again, but also wish he would have communicated that he wanted me there. Is there a way we can recover from this, or will things never be the same?
Aww.
And then a emoji of like the sad, like the
yes,
with the watery giant eyes.
I got it. It sounds like she did not prioritize him because she really thought this was an inconsequential event. Mm-hmm. She didn't think this was like a food drop over Bangladesh or a blood drive for sick children. This was a wisdom tooth, right? Mm-hmm. Now, he obviously, as somebody who's in his 20s, who still lives with his parents, felt that it was a bigger deal than it was. Now, this is a case of I assumed you knew how I felt.
Yep.
On his part, I assumed that you would know that this was the Olympics and I had tickets to, you know what I mean? It's like I had front row seats. And yeah, she was like, we were supposed to watch a movie together over the phone one night and I couldn't make it.
Right.
So
right,
they have to communicate. He has to say, this was important to me in future.
Yes.
These are the kind of things that are important to me. And she should say, because I miss this, it doesn't mean I care for you any less.
Exactly.
I did not think from my perspective, just because I thought from my perspective that this was not a big deal, it doesn't mean that I don't think you're a big deal.
Right.
I would like to point out that he also said, where is this? He was doing fine and in no pain. So he couldn't even when she...
So what's he crying about?
When she asked him, he could not, again... Now we're going back to vulnerability and the embarrassment of saying even basic needs and wants.
To someone who has already said, like, they want to be with you, yeah, right? You're not even putting yourself out really to a stranger.
This is really about white fragility. What I'm hearing. He didn't. It's the assumption. You should know how I feel.
Yes.
Like my husband and I have this thing, and we almost say it jokingly, but we say it seriously a lot, too, is I'm asking for what I want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, could you please come get me? And he goes, well, it's really not convenient for me to come get you at this. I'm asking for what I want.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting off a plane that day. I'm going to be tired and exhausted. I want to see you. I'm asking for what I want.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so embarrassing. I'm not, by the way, I'm not justifying this, dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know in your 20s, like I didn't learn this lesson until my 30s, but, so my apologies to all girlfriends in my 20s. So I get, but I think he's in the wrong. Mm-hmm. I think he's very obvious.
I think also when you're in your 20s, you're a teenager in your 20s.
Mm. Yep.
You know what I mean? Just because you've graduated from high school and you're in your 20s, also you still live at home.
I was about to say, he lives with his parents. But that would be another reason to me where I'm like, well, you got your mama right there. What you need me to come back for?
What do you need me for? And he wasn't in any pain.
Exactly.
He said he was fine, but I want you to pay attention to me. So just say that. I want you to pay attention to me. Yeah. I need you.
I know.
Because if somebody says that to me, I know I'm being a baby, but I just need you. I'm like, okay, I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think exactly as you said, it's like, y'all, what you say, like, can we get over this? Yeah, you can get over this as long as, you know, I think the whole thing, right? Who are we talking to where it's like, it's not just important how you fight, but how quickly you let it go, like how quickly you go back to love. And so I think that's the thing here. You can get over this if you both drop the shit. Yeah. You each say like, hey, to me, I thought wisdom teeth wasn't a big deal. And you said you weren't in pain, and I know, you know, and I now know from you after the fact that it was a big deal. And now I will remember that for the future. Mm-hmm.
Also, the deal is as married people, if we've forgiven each other for this, you don't get to bring it up again.
Uh-huh.
Because then you're running reruns in order to rehash this. If we've really forgiven each other, then we don't bring it up again.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's hard.
I know. I was like, honey, I love to hold on to some shit.
Oh, yeah.
That's easier in theory.
I'm like, you're exhibit
saying,
A.
Yeah. I can't walk into an argument with a quiver full of past experiences to shoot at my lover. Yeah.
Judge, let the record show
exactly
that this represents a history of neglect and inconsideration.
The true pattern has emerged.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's true.
All right. Why don't we do a voicemail?
I love the voicemails, you guys. You got to call us, okay? 323-524-7839. It's real good because when I hear your voice, I get to know where you're at emotionally. Your voice is shaky.
Let's do something real.
Okay.
Hey, what's up, Naomi and Andy? Oh, such a big fan of you guys. Can't even tell you how much I look forward to your show and your vibe and just your relationship and how much you love each other and get each other and make each other laugh is like my hero behind the question I'm about to ask you. So my boyfriend, our relationship is so fun. It reminds me actually of you guys a lot just because when we just get to talking, it's like a really funny thing and I kind of sometimes wish we were recording ourselves. Ooh. But here's the catch. So he's not a big fan of himself and it sucks because it's like, he's just the best and he's my favorite hang and he's such a wonderful dude, but it's almost like his lack of self-love keeps any of my love from soaking in. And it's a little more complicated because I have two kids and they're from two different dads. And they love him, but he doesn't feel like he's very comfortable in his body or with himself to where, like, all the love that we have for him is also kind of, like, not registering. And so he just feels very outsider syndrome, and he doesn't love himself, and it's just the worst. So we're on our third therapist. I adore this human being so much, and I don't know how to convey to him how amazing he is and let him just live in a world where he believes himself to suck. It's so hard. Okay, anyway, gosh, I am chatty. Thanks, guys. This is hilarious. It's probably too long for the show, but big fan. All right, bye.
That's really great. That was really deep.
Yeah.
All right, this is the only kind of metaphor I can, if that applies in very kind of concrete ways. If your boyfriend had a broken arm, let's say your arm snapped in half on a ski trip in Vermont. No amount of your coaxing and caretaking is going to make it heal any quicker than it needs to. Can you facilitate the healing? Can you make him comfortable into a point where his body can relax enough in order to do the healing that it needs to? Absolutely. You can create a space for him to heal. You can create comfort. You can create an environment where he can convalesce. Mm-hmm. However, the healing of that broken limb is ultimately up to his body, his immune system, and the engineering of his genetics.
And how well he's willing to convalesce, meaning
and
sit
how
your
well
butt
he's
down.
Willing to convalesce.
Yeah,
I mean,
do
you
what
can't
you
make
do.
Him go to PT. Mm-hmm. You can't if your boyfriend has a broken limb and he's like, I don't fucking feel like going to PT. It's like you can talk about the benefits of loving yourself, of taking care of yourself, but that's his work. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I mean, because that I've learned that in Codependence Anonymous, that it's kind of like I can only take you so far. I can drop you off at the airport, but you getting on the plane is up to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it sounds like he's a great guy because she kept on saying he's a great guy. He's a great guy. He's a great guy. Give him the space to find it on his own. But you can't do that for him.
Yeah, it's also like when she, it's interesting, it's a really good, the way she described it though is also very, what's the word, edifying for me, like when she's like, he feels so bad that my love can't soak in.
Right.
And I'm like, that is what low self-esteem will do.
It salts the ground.
Yeah, like even when somebody is there for you, you feeling so bad, you don't even let them love on you. You know? And so I'm like, that is like such
You won't even let them love on you. I mean, COVID, we've all gained a bunch of weight. My husband has a little belly and I still think he's sexy as fuck. I still think he's cute, but he's always like, oh, my belly.
Yeah.
I'm the belly. And I don't give a shit about your belly. I think you're hot.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
That's
but
what
I
Andy
can't.
Says to me.
I know, but he has to be in a space to go, okay.
Right. Right. You can say it 100 times, but exactly. Yeah. And it's like, I think you said we've tried three therapists. Do you mean couples therapy or you mean just like he's gone? You know what I mean? Like, because I would say.
Yeah, because she's spoken the weenie. She said
I was clarifying.
Yes. Thank you. Because my thing is like, it has to be his own therapist and it has to be a person he picks that he likes, that he sticks with. And I don't think you should. I mean, kind of what Alec has just said, you know, you don't need to be involved in it. Like, let him go figure this out with this person. Don't even ask.
Yeah, and I think when you're in your 20s, you're just kind of like, I know I'm certainly like this. How can I fix this?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do? How can we get in there and come up with solutions? You know,
right.
Like, and you know, my son will sometimes come, or my husband will go, I don't need you to come up with a solution right now. I just want you to listen.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I just want you to listen.
It's tough.
It's tough because I'm a solver. I'm always like, you know what you need to do. And sometimes that's the last thing people need to hear. Sometimes they just need to be heard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to be validated. I'm feeling a certain, some kind of way.
Right.
And you go, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, but you can't fix everything for your partner.
Right.
No, but it's that I get that because I'm the same way. And it comes from that, like that there's an anxiety. If there's a problem,
sure.
I'm anxious. Mm-hmm. And so it's partly this kind of like selfishness where I'm trying to get rid of my own anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a learning to just like listen to your partner is learning
and be
how
okay
to,
with the discomfort
is learning. Yes, exactly.
Yes.
How to just be like, okay, it's okay to be anxious. Cause like we live in a society where like any bad feeling has to be evacuated immediately.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you can live in that bad feeling for a while. Right. It's okay to live in that.
You
don't
can
have to
sit in the discomfort. You can sit in not knowing. You can sit in uncertainty. It's not fun.
Right. But it's not fatal.
But it's not. It's exactly. It's not fun, but it's not fatal. And here's the real tea. You don't know the answers all the time. I don't know. I don't know why I hate myself. I don't know why I'm in a bad mood. Right. I don't know why I don't feel good about myself today. It just is.
Right. Right. Exactly. Plus, it's like, you got your two kids anyway. You got a lot going on. Let him handle himself, girl. You got enough going on with two children.
But get him. But like Alex said,
he's not one of your kids.
He's not one of your kids.
Stop talking to me like I am one of your kids.
Give him the foundation.
Yes.
And then he has to take the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You take him partway to Mordor. And then
you
he...
and Mordor today.
You but you're gonna have to drop the ring in on your own.
He's gotta drop the ring himself.
I'll escort you to the Ents, and then peace out.
Why don't we do one more quick one?
Una mas.
Let's do. This is a fun one.
This is fun.
Oh my God, I'm loving every second, and also
I'm so much smarter at other people's problems.
All right, here we go.
Hi, Andy. Hi, Naomi. I'm calling in now because I listen to y'all on my commute home, I was listening to y'all, stopped at the supermarket, kept listening. And while I'm there finalizing my order at checkout, I'm seeing coupons print out based off of previous purchases. Now, I know what I go to the supermarket for regularly because it's a pandemic. I'm buying the same shit every fucking week. I get these coupons printed out, and they are generating for things that my last boyfriend would purchase. So I log on to app for the supermarket, and I'm able to pull up previous orders that I made when I put my phone number in to collect my rewards. Come to find out, my ex is still putting my phone number in for the coupons. Like, sure, whatever, the points are generated under my name, but if I activate me, like, rewards, we'll call them, on my turn, I will be able to get those rewards.
Yeah.
But if I'm activating these rewards and someone's inputting my information, they're the one getting their rewards. So basically, this is mad long-winded, and I'm so sorry, but I'm just so flabbergasted as to why my ex is still putting my phone number in to collect rewards, even though we're no longer together. We were together for a very long period of time, almost 8 years, and we've been broken up for about a year now. We haven't really spoken in about that much time. Why is he still putting my phone number in? Do I reach out to him? Do I leave it? Do I change my phone number? Do I change the number listed on the app? I'm at wit's end. All of my friends think I'm crazy. Y'all probably think I'm crazy. But I just had to get this shit out. Anyways, I love y'all. Have a good one.
Oh, my God.
First of all, I love the devotion in her voice to the two of you, that she listens in the car and she listens to the grocery store. I mean, that's, you are in her head.
Yeah.
So that's a tribute to you both.
Well, this is also a woman after my own heart, because she off all the right. rails. Okay? Right. She off the rails. Well, she said, I'm at wit's end. Do I change my phone number?
Right. Okay, so you go first.
No. I don't even know the answer yet. I don't know what to
don't,
say.
I know one thing. Don't change your phone number. That's the one thing I know.
Okay, this is what I get, because this is who I am. Because when I break up with somebody, I need to not hear from you or see you, or I need to disengage for a year. Mm-hmm. I have an ex who I'm still friends with, but that's to his tribute. Because he's friends with all his exes, he's that guy, right? You know, and for the first year after we broke up, I was like, I need to move away from you. I need to not hear from you. I need to not talk. That's my process. And he finally, like, we did not talk for a really long time, but that's what I needed. Now, she sounds as if, I broke up with him a year ago, I don't want to be reminded that he's still around someplace, especially doing something as intimate as inputting my phone number.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's like going through my sock drawer. I mean, you're putting in my phone number. So if she really wants him off, then that's a tech meeting she has to set up with herself to make herself exclusive to this account. Right. But I'm saying, like, if you can put up with the annoyance of it, you're getting double the points.
Right.
But she's worried he's going to use those points. I understand that.
Oh.
She's worried.
Oh, because what I heard is that he can't use the points.
But he can get the deals in the moment. You know, like when you're at the store and it's like people at rewards get $1 off or get $2 off, whatever. And she's like, he don't need to be getting $2 off on my name.
Right.
Right?
Well, like that's if that's the issue, then she should just take the 10 minutes or half an hour it takes to have the account be exclusive.
But Alec, I like where you were coming from because you saw that's like some real therapist shit. You saw the problem behind the problem, right? Her problem is not like a major problem, but the bigger thing is maybe she doesn't want to be reminded that her ex exists.
It's really not about the coupon. Right. It's not about, it's that whenever I go to groceries and I'm going there all the time and I'm buying the same shit, I have to be reminded that I'm still with you and right. that you're still in my life in this weird way. Right. And I broke up with you and I don't want to be a part of you anymore. I don't want to be reminded of you.
Yeah. That stuff's tough. A friend of mine, he broke up with someone, or she broke up with him, like, earlier in the summer. Mm-hmm. And then a couple, like, a month ago, like, one of her tweets went viral, and it really fucked him up. Because he had to keep seeing her all day, like, show up in his Twitter feed. And it was
thank
like...
Thank God social media did not exist in the 90s and 80s.
Oh, my,
You lived in New York City. It's like the rule in New York City is the one person you never want to see again is the person you're going to bump into every 10 minutes to the most obscure places.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could be at BAM or at a Polynesian restaurant in the Lower East Side, and you will still run into that one person.
I know. I used to have a rule where I said I'm only dating men who in the outer boroughs, so that when this goes south, I don't have to run into them again.
Uh-huh.
That was my theory. But then next thing you know, you over here in Soho, and there he go at the comedy show. Do you know what I mean? The guy who's like, oh,
that's why you have to be
work.
Sure about me.
Right.
Because you're like, oh, because if this doesn't go well, we're going to see each other a lot.
He's a philosophy major. I'm not going to see him at a convention for specious reasoning. I mean, it's like...
Those are some great conventions, by the way.
I know. They're pretty good.
Those guys know how to drink.
I get it. You don't want to be thinking about your man, and you don't want to know that he out here, or X-Man, and you don't want to know he out here eating Oreos, you know? So I understand.
On my dime. On my reward.
Getting 50%, 50 cents off the Oreos. Rude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that BOGO is mine.
It's mine.
So yeah, you just got to change it. So like, you are not crazy, but yeah, I get it. I get that. Yeah, like, you don't want to think of this person ever again. You want
the break to be
clean. Crazy. Yeah,
I don't think she's crazy, but I think this turns out to, like, my therapist would say, take the other person out of the equation. This is just up to you, and you're kind of like navigating your own comfort throughout the day. What do you need to do in order to not feel uncomfortable while you're buying toilet paper?
Right. Oh, I loved her tone, though.
Me too.
I felt like that was a really good, like, 2.5 minute stand-up set. That was like a really good, I felt like I might build this out.
She was authentic.
It was real.
The disdain was real.
The disdain, yes. And I like that she walked us through it. She's like, and coupons are printing for things that I don't buy.
And she paints a pretty accurate picture of the type of person he is.
Yeah.
And why they're no longer together. As you think about it, it's like using the rewards points of somebody you broke up with is kind of hostile, in addition to being unethical.
And lazy. Get your own card. They'll give it to you when you're checking out.
You're lazy, unethical, and not a good person.
Maybe he's one of those people that doesn't want, like, tries not to have his information out there. And so he didn't want it. They're like, oh, you can sign up for one of your own. And he's like, no.
Exactly.
I don't want the Aldi's to have my phone number.
I don't want the Aldi's to know me.
I don't want Ralph's to know where
I'm wondering
I live.
If I ever did anything like that, use somebody else's rewards points after we've broken up.
I mean, I use my mother's
I've used my parents
all the time.
But you're still together. You didn't break up with your mom.
We're still together, but yeah.
My parents have definitely used my Rite Aid points.
Oh,
it's their account. I've used their account, and then they've got my points. And you know what?
There you go.
You know what? For taking care of me for 18 years, that's your reward.
All right. It's
mom and dad.
Yeah,
you got
the least I can do.
The least I can do is you can use my Rite Aid. You get my Rite Aid points when I use your account.
You're a very good son.
Thank you,
Alan.
I wish they would recognize that.
Alec, thank you so much for talking
with
us, boo. You are so, I think you're just like, it was so, you know, we met earlier this year, Gift of Quar, when you had me on Hot Mess Pod.
Yeah, the Hot Mess Pod, available wherever you find a podcast such as yours are streaming. If you can check out, we talk a lot about mental health, and you were on the show, and thank you so much, because I'm a big fan of you both, and it's delightful. You know, I in the third grade, I had glasses, corrective shoes, and a retainer all at the same time. So secretly, I'm delighted to be asked anywhere.
Oh, I get that energy. All right. And we'll see you all next time.
Bye.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.